We are no stranger to what lie ahead. Some of us have tread its path for countless decades. Today we hear again the call to the foot of the cross, knowing that we will stare once again into his face, horrified to enter this terrible, appalling week. 34 days of fasting has perhaps tightened our belts. Maybe we have held back desires, prayed more, fed the hungry, given clothing to those who need it. So here in this cathedral, 1 week before the biggest feast of the year, we are compelled onto the scene. Painful as this is for us, we cannot escape, cannot hurry his suffering away. We enter as willing participants, tossed into a disorderly crowd, a throng disguised with our own sweat and mud and rage, a people shouting for freedom and for redemption. He passes before us like royalty, only an uncommon king, not the one expected, astride a donkey. We throw down our cloaks for a parade that ends at Olive Mountain, joining the congregation of men, women, children, and neighbors crying out, "Hosanna! Hosanna to the King!" If there is culpability to be had here at all, it is the shame we feel when we realize that we are capable of standing at the gates today, shouting Hosanna, and equally capable of standing with the crowd on Friday, shouting, "Crucify him." There is mercy here too, once we accept that we are simultaneously convicted and forgiven. They shove him into the temple, pushed like a lamb to butchery, disappearing into a maze of shadows, followed not by those who love him, but by those who conspire with death. Oh, the horror when Peter denies knowing him. Vainly we commit to stay awake and alert, to keep our feet planted firmly in the courtyard, our hand firm upon his shoulder when the rooster crows. Yet we stand convicted with Peter by our shared humanity. What more could we have done to keep him off this outrageous path? Made greater sacrifices? Eaten less during Lent? Given more to the poor? From the moment ashes were smeared on our head 34 days ago, we knew this hour was coming. But that recollection does little to steel us against the horrors of the beatings and the brutality of the mob. Memory does nothing to keep our stomach from retching at the sounds of leather rending flesh from bone. So they lead him away, up the hill, to slaughter. They, the few, congregate on the path to carry his cross, wipe his face. They pick him up when he falls. This from the same crowd who derides and insults him in his innocence. Neither pleas nor wailing stop his ascent. In fact, now it appears he is resigned to take this path alone. Dear Jesus, please stop. They nail him to the wood, rusted steel violating pure wrists and feet. Lifted up, he struggles for breath. Strange fruit hanging on a blameless tree. In muted tones, piercing the soul of every person there, he cries out. Neither a curse nor a protest, but a transcendent submission to his God. And then, unprepared as we are, he breathes his last. It is not defeat that passes his lips, or fear that rises from the death rattle in his throat. Strangely, it is submission emerging from deep within his soul, spilling out, embracing the whole world over. That breath, which reached back into history and stretches far out into the future, touching us here today, holding us spellbound by a love that has no end. It is not our deeds, our fasting, our care for the poor, nor by our prayers, where we find redemption. It is by that holy breath passing his lips, his dying breath of surrender, that vanquishes fear, extinguishes death, declares victory over hatred. His last breath, whispering to us now, come. Come, both you who have fasted and you who have not. The abundant table is set. Resurrection is within your grasp. You are the beloved in whom God takes delight. God's own, who desires you, whose desire for you is endless. Come. And the drop of blood draining from his still and pierced heart, falling onto our sin-streaked soul, is, alas, the love that beckons us to wrestle with the darkness within and beckons us to wake up, to wonder, to wake up, to hope.